The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a Realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Chase Elliott will join his father as the only Georgia-born driver now. Two of them to win at Atlanta Motor Speedway.
So you think these fans have heard of the pool room before in Dawsonville? We've been live all day there with Rutledge. Is it okay if Rutledge rings the siren tonight?
Yeah, just don't tell him not to break it now. That thing is really special.
Let's hit that siren!
Well, that's what it looked like. Welcome to NASCAR America Motor Miles. Kyle Petty's still laughing about the peach. There's a whole story to that. Jeff Burton, Steve Letarte. Listen, we have a lot jammed into this show. Great race at Atlanta, and it was a good weekend for Georgia drivers. We had, what, Austin Hill, Chase Elliott. Yes. So two Georgia drivers, two Georgia natives, won both the Xfinity and the Cup race. Corey LaJoie is going to join us in the second segment. Had a great run right there. It ended up a big wreck, but there was a lot of sparks and a lot of highlights, and we're going to talk about it. We're going to have a little bit of a Ross Chastain conversation, I'm sure. And also, our old buddy Parker Kligerman found his way back to victory lane in the truck. Well done, right, Parker.
Oh, yes.
So we're going to have him on here and tell him everything he could have possibly done better in the truck race, even though he went to victory lane. But let's start down in Atlanta, the new Atlanta. Jeff, you and I had this conversation. What are we going to see? We're going to see drafting. We're going to see single file. It looked a little spread out on Saturday with the lower grip, the lower downforce. We get to Sunday, it looked like Speedway racing to me. Great race.
Well, what I liked about it was Speedway racing with poor handling cars. It reminded me of a Daytona race before it got repaved, where some people go run wide open, some people couldn't. And I like that because that shows me that already the track is starting to change a little bit, and we're going to go through this transition of races like that, where what is the grip level? Can I run wide open? Can I not run wide open? And that has proven to produce some pretty exciting racing.
Yeah, and listen, from start to finish, they raced every lap. And that's all you can say. And we don't get that all the time. So you have to look at it from the time the green flag dropped until the time the checkered flag fell. Somebody was racing somewhere, and 90% of the time, it was first, second, third, and fourth. It was where the camera was. So it was the best race I've seen, racing-wise, almost all year long.
Well, listen, as we always say, this is a fan show. You fans are the most important part, so we'll be taking your phone calls. 1-844-NASCAR-NBC. So that was the racing. We talked about the chaos. Chase Elliott didn't just win, but I think he got overlooked. He swept the race. He won stage one, stage two, and the finish. And I bring that up just because, you know, I'm with you. I know he had a good car, but that perhaps is the hardest thing to do, especially at a speedway where we see kind of comers and goers, pushes and shoves. I enjoyed the style of racing.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised we didn't have the big wreck. Like, we had some wrecks,
listen,
but not a 20-car pileup.
I was fascinated. Christopher Bell spins out of the middle of the pack, nothing.
Yeah.
Denny spins out of the middle of the pack, nothing. You know what I mean? I mean, you just spun out of the middle of the pack. It's not like it was at Daytona or Talladega where you go up and come back and you collect and all that stuff. We didn't see a lot of that. So I was really surprised about that. I didn't know what to expect. I watched the spring race, and I thought, okay, and that was different, you know. But is this going to be just as different? I was impressed. I was impressed that even the ill-handling cars seemed to be able to stay in the pack and make an adjustment and get where they needed to be. And that I think that's a tribute to the car and to the drivers because they never gave up on what they had.
So I think we should set the stage, right? So we're late in the race at this point, and there's going to be a restart. Ends up being Corey LaJoie and Martin Truex Jr. on the front row. They go through one and two. Truex slides up. That basically puts the 9 of Chase Elliott, the 7 of Corey LaJoie battling on the last two laps. So, Jeff, when we go back to look at it, right, we're going to start here. It's about 2 to go, I think, at this point. And this is where Chase Elliott finds his way back to the lead. He gets a big run off the nose of the 43. At this point, I think the 7's kind of a sitting duck. I don't think he can protect both lanes.
Well, Chase Elliott had moved from the bottom lane to the outside lane because Erik Jones and Blaney on the outside lane had some momentum. That pushed Chase out in front of Corey. So now Corey, now he's got a push from the one car on the bottom, but I don't think the one car was a great pusher. The front end damage on the car, I thought that hurt the speed of that car. Corey does the same thing that Chase did. So Corey's looking. Now he moves to the top. He picks up the run from Erik Jones and Blaney. Now he's got the momentum. What's he going to do with it? Tries to go to the outside. Almost there. Chase with a big block, and now Corey's in the wall. And now game over. Now the big wreck. But, you know, when I look at that, both Chase Elliott and Corey LaJoie changed lanes to get the push from the outside lane to get that forward momentum. Yeah. That was great work by the spotters. Great work by the drivers. I think the damage on the one car had contributed to that a great deal. There just was not a lot of energy on the bottom lane.
Well, we're going to get to the damage in the one car because there's a lot of conversation about that damage. But first, I think we need to give credit where credit's due. Chase Elliott, those last couple laps, I thought the black block was fair. Corey LaJoie said the block was fair.
Yeah.
What was your thoughts on the move?
Listen, I thought it was fair. And listen, I heard him explain it as a mega block.
Yeah.
Okay, but when I watch it, I think it's just more like, hey, I'm going up here. I'm going up here. You know what I mean? He just kind of eased over that way. And you see, he doesn't change lanes drastically. He floats up in about 100 yards and takes him up there. And listen, it's a block straight up. But it's the last freaking lap, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Corey did everything he could do. And I was just in here talking to Nate. God, he drove a great race, man. He drove a great race, and he did everything. When you get in that situation, he'll be a better driver next time he's in that situation, and he'll be a better driver the third time he's in that situation. The difference is the 9 car has been there time after time after time. When I look at that, I'm looking at Erik Jones, I'm looking at Corey LaJoie, and I'm looking at Ross Chastain, 3 guys that have probably been there once, maybe twice at the most. They don't know what they're doing either. You know, and that's not a knock at them. They just don't have that experience that if you had a Denny Hamlin or a Kevin Harvick or a Kyle Busch or those guys, those last laps may have played out different.
Well, he mentioned Denny Hamlin. Now's the time. We might as well go ahead and transition from Chase to the man of the hour. I'd like to thank Ross Chastain because he's making my job real easy. It's a lot of content for all of us to talk about. It's been a long season of frustration for multiple drivers with Ross Chastain. Once again at Atlanta, we see an accident. There was one accident where Chastain made contact with Truex, but this is the one that I think everybody was shocked by. If we woke at it one more time, right? Chastain right here just leaves the bottom by a groove and a half, comes up and catches the left rear of Denny Hamlin. It was pretty egregious, in my opinion, the wreck and our great...
See, I don't see it that way.
Well, hold on. Well, let's hear from the guys involved. Before we analyze it, let's hear from both Denny Hamlin and Ross Chastain of their opinion of that incident.
You were racing so good to the end of that, it really affected the end of your race. Talk about how you were doing before that.
Yeah, we were in really good position. We were about to clear the one and the P3, I think, on the outside line. So I was really happy with where I was at, for sure. And I think the one probably sensed we were about to clear him, and so I chased us up there and got into this.
At what point has the line been crossed too many times? One car.
I mean, it's just it's all in whatever level I'm willing to take, and it's just another unfortunate circumstance for him.
Is there any way he's going to win a championship this year with the way he's upset so many people?
I don't know. I think it's just everyone has their different tolerance levels, certainly. But I've reached my peak.
Well, then what do you do about it? How do you walk out of here?
The car on the right.
It all works itself out in the end.
Thank you, Denny.
Yep, thank you. When stuff like that keeps happening, how does that change your mindset as a racer, just on the racetrack, in the race, and as you move forward to new races?
In the car, it's no different. Just keep trying to win, right? Keep restarting. We're restarting the front two rows for the end, and we're going to have a shot. So, yeah, now it's, I'll explain my side to him and tell him, you know, I had damage, and I overestimated how fast I could go in the corner with the draft, and
Ross, obviously you talked about learning and the process of learning throughout all this, but obviously it's another situation. Do you worry how much of an impact this can have potentially throughout the rest of the season, potentially in the playoffs, if more guys get upset, and what kind of impact that could have on you later in the year?
This one's so different because I had so much damage. I just, y'all know that I would take full responsibility if I just ran into him, but I had so much damage. I was so much tighter. We had done a lot to free the car up, and it was just way too tight, and I just couldn't carry the throttle I could earlier, and I still lifted some, but it wasn't enough. So I don't put this one anywhere near the other incidents.
You need to explain that to him or others?
Oh,
or?
Sure. Yeah.
That's good.
I'm standing by with Ross Chastain, who's here.
All right, so let's basically, I'm going to wrap it all up. Denny didn't say a whole lot. He was pretty quiet, didn't, you know, gave some answers. I didn't hear a whole lot there other than, you know, tolerance level, and it works itself out. I'm not sure what that's code for. Maybe it's not code for anything. Then Ross Chastain is taking the position that he feels this incident is different than most because he had damage on the vehicle. I don't like that situation or that explanation personally because he had damage on that vehicle for many, many laps, and I feel like he had driven it all the way back up into the top five. He knew what the situation was. I slept on this, and I thought about this, and I'm going to start taking the position that who am I to judge what Chastain does on the racetrack? He has found his way to the top of the most elite stock car racing series in the world, and he's won two races this year. What I'm looking for, Jeff, here's my new frustration with Chastain.
My new frustration is,
after I slept on it, is own it. I just want him to own it. If you're going to be the guy that are going to hit people, own it. Logano moves Byron at Darlington, and when I asked, it's not I got in too deep, he lifted too early. No, he said, yeah, he made me mad, and I moved him out of the way. And I'm like, whether I like it or not, bravo, Joey Logano. So Ross Chastain, I've moved past. I wasn't a driver like you two. I'm not going to judge the driving. But I can judge the response in the media, and I'm waiting for Chastain to just own it when he gets out of the race car.
Well, Kyle said he saw it differently, so I'm going to give the floor to Kyle.
Okay, the man from Virginia has given one minute to the man from North Carolina.
I just think Chastain is the whipping boy right now. It's like if we got a cookie jar and a cookie's missing, we're all going to say Ross took it. Ross has got it.
But is it fair because he's taken it five times, though?
Listen, he's put himself in that position.
Okay.
I'm not going to argue that point.
Okay.
I am not going to argue that point. He has put himself in that position. But he's put himself in a position that if he touches another car, we're going to scream about it. We as the media are going to scream about it. Drivers are going to scream about it. Logano has been in that position.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Logano owns it. He's been in that position. Ross puts himself in bad places on the racetrack. And we've all seen drivers. You and I grew up with drivers who you could run the whole race, and they're going to put themselves in a position at least six times to crash everybody in the field, and they're going to count on you to save their butt. Okay? And Ross will do that. Ross will put himself in a position and count on Jeff to save him. He'll count on Denny to save him. He'll count on somebody else. He's got to learn. He's got to get better from that perspective. Ross has only been in a car to run up front for the last year and a half. We're talking just like we're talking about Corey.
Mm-hmm.
Get some experience, okay? But I'm not going to criticize him too much because right now everybody else is flapping their jaws while he's kicking their ass, okay? He's third in points.
Mm-hmm.
He's third in points. See, Denny's 19, okay? He's got double the top fives, double the top tens. He's kicking your butt. I grew up with this when Darrell Waltrip came to the sport. Richard Petty, Bobby Allison, Cale Yarborough, hated his ass, okay? Darrell hated Dale Earnhardt Sr. Hated him when he come along because he took it away from him.
Right.
We see this all the time. We're talking about the difference between a 28 or 29-year-old and a 41-year-old. The writing's on the wall, okay? There's a changing of the guard. We're seeing it with this car. We're seeing it. There's a frustration level there with Denny, too. It just so happens, just like with Jimmy Spencer and Kurt Busch, they used to just do this all the time.
Right.
Now we're seeing it with these two. So I don't really have a problem. And if anybody, I don't think that was intentional. I think it was stupid. But I don't think it was intentional. Putting yourself in that position was not smart. But it wasn't intentional. He didn't intentionally put himself, you know.
So I got two things. First of all, we've missed Kyle Petty. Congratulations on the newborn, because I've been missing that. And the second thing is the Logano's watching, going, whoa, 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 whoa. How did I even get into this? I had nothing to do with it.
That's true.
But he is a good example for both of us. All right, you heard my man from North Carolina back to the man from Virginia.
That's just how I feel. But,
no, that's fine. But that's the beauty of it. And I think that's what makes the sport so great. We don't all have to see it the same way.
No.
So go ahead.
Listen, I defended Ross Chastain at COTA.
Yeah.
Because people are like, he just wrecked him. Well, he got moved out of the way.
That's right.
By the guy that he moved back out of the way for the
win.
What are you supposed to do? Just let him push you around? You can't do that. Here's where I am with Ross. Number one, I love his intensity. I respect a great deal how he got here.
Yeah.
And I think that he is afraid to back it down because he's had to fight, scratch, claw for everything he's got. He's afraid to change. He's afraid if he does, they're going to push him around. He's not going to be willing to do the things that he has been doing that has got him here. I have complete respect for that. The problem I've got with Ross is that some of these mistakes, he's way better than.
True.
So not so sure they're mistakes. Like, his talent level is high enough to win cup races, to be a championship contender. I don't know how you drive into turn three at Atlanta and not lift. Like, that makes no sense to me. So when I watch some of this stuff, even the thing with Truex, he's got Truex jacked up and spins him around. You got a gas pedal in that thing. We've watched racing at these racetracks with people trying to push each other. It doesn't work out. Like, he's better than the situation that he is putting himself and others in.
Right.
And that is the thing when I watch Ross, and I've watched Ross with a ton of respect and at the same time a ton of frustration as a former driver, not only in Cup, but in trucks. You and I went and watched many truck races and many Xfinity races, and I'm like, if I was racing against that guy, I wouldn't have tolerated it.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. But I have a ton of respect
right
for where Ross has come from and what he's having to do. When you start trying to take other people's trophies, they don't like it.
Yeah,
right?
No, that's true.
But
that's true.
There is a reason. I do agree with you, because we've seen it over and over and over in this sport where people become the whipping boy. Like we saw with Jimmy Spencer.
Yep.
He could be near a wreck and it was his fault.
Yep.
We saw with Ernie Irvin.
Yep.
Right? We've seen it multiple times, and that has happened with Ross. But there is undeniably, if you go back and you talk to Xfinity drivers and you talk to truck drivers, you talk to Cup drivers, he is the name that constantly comes
up
of the guy that they just don't think gives them any respect.
Yeah.
And that's his choice.
That's his choice.
I'm not
that's
the
right
one here, and you're not the one here, and you're not the one here to tell Ross how he should race.
Yeah.
But there is a consequence. There's a consequence to not being aggressive enough.
Yeah,
for sure.
Right?
There is.
So let's take this forward, because I agree with you. I think that's where I got to my point. If you're good enough to win two races, then you can't tell me you're not good enough not to hit people. That's where I'm talking. I want them to own it. So let's move it forward,
though. Examples of people that were good enough to win races and not good enough not to hit people.
Okay, that's
too
fair. But so let's move it forward, though, because Denny was asked, would he win a championship?
But not at the rate that it happens with Ross.
Oh, yeah. Ernie Irvin.
Well, but Ernie Irvin changed.
I don't think he did change.
Well, Ernie Irvin
my point is, I'll say this. You said that you think that Ross is smart enough that maybe some of this is that he should be smarter than that. I'm not sure he's smarter than that sometimes. Okay? I never thought Ernie was smarter than that. Okay, and I'll be straight up with you. Ernie just drove the shit out of the car. Okay, he just drove the shit out of it. You know that. He just drove the car. You know what I mean? I mean, he just run the wheels off of it, race in and race out.
Which is what Ross does.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm not sure that I totally agree with all of it.
Can we be clear on this? The Ross Chastain that we have today is not the same Ross Chastain we're going to have for 10 years.
No, it's not.
Listen, I don't want people to think, or you to think, or you to think, or whatever, or Ross to think.
Yeah.
I have a ton of respect for him. He's better than what some of the decisions he makes. That's what frustrates me with Ross. And he puts drivers consistently in really bad situations.
Yes.
And there's a consequence to that. He has to make that decision. Is it worth it? This is what I'll say about, let me say this. Oh. So I had multiple occasions where I made decisions to do things that some of them worked out and some of them didn't.
That's right.
And
we
did
all
did. Too.
We all did.
And you did it on strategy.
Yeah, yeah. You did on strategy. That's
and
right.
We applied and we learned. And we applied and we learned. And that's what Ross is going through.
Yep.
And the biggest challenge for Ross Chastain is, can he take the chip off his shoulder and still win?
Good point.
That's
a valid point.
Biggest challenge for Ross Chastain.
Hey,
if he changes, can he win races? Yeah. And he would be terrified to change, and his car owner is terrified to change, and his crew chief is terrified for him to change because they want to win.
I'm going to apply and learn.
And
you know what I'm
going to
apply and learn? I'm going to apply and learn. This is a two-segment conversation. And we got our man Corey LaJoy coming up in the next segment. So we're going to steer it back to Corey and have a conversation with him about his exciting run down in Atlanta. But when our old buddy Parker joins in the third segment, we're going to bring Chastain back up.
All right, we'll do
so
it
next
again.
Up,
we'll do it again.
Corey LaJoy, the man who was within about a mile of getting that first ever win. Bring him in. We're going to talk to him next on NASCAR America Motor Miles. There's the man, Super Shoe, right there.
Right there.
Smile, man. You deserve it.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
He's had to listen to all the cheering for the other guy today. How close was that for you, my friend?
Closest I've ever been, for sure. That was fun. I'm proud of my guys. Spire, Ray's Energy, Built Bar, Schluter, everybody's helped us out. It was nice to have that thing out in the wind for once. But, I made my move and didn't work out. He made a good block, and the siren was ringing in Dawsonville, unfortunately. I wish that granny in the front row over there wouldn't been clapping so much. I wish that seven car was in victory lane. But we keep running like this more consistently, that time will come.
Walk us through the final restart, Corey, and your thinking on what moves you had to make and then the one you've ultimately made that got you into trouble.
I was going to school. I mean, that was the first time I've been leading a restart at one of these super speedway style racetracks, and how much you have to drag back, time your runs, cover the lanes is all new to me. So when I get myself in that position again, I'll be a little more prepared, and hopefully we can do a little better job and be the one that can throw the blocks as opposed to the one that's trying to make that late race move, because that guy usually is in the catbird seat. But you know, we I just had some fun. I know that, and hopefully we can have that seven car up front more often.
Well, from an interview in Atlanta to your screens here at home, the driver of the seven, Corey LaJoy. Corey, first of all, thanks for joining us. I want to say what you did on track was amazing. The moves were awesome, but I think I was more impressed with the interview. I love the authenticity, the honesty, you calling out the grandma from the pool hall. You had it all in there. Take us through that moment, right? Like you're a guy that's been in the sport a long time, and you saw the white, you had a move, you were there. How do you compose all that and put such a great interview together?
Well, I think because racing has turned into my hobby and my work has been talking to here on Motor Mouse or on the podcast Stack and Pennies or on Sirius XM Radio. So like in that, as you guys know, like when you're in the heat of the battle, you only see it from your own point of view. Now, seeing it as like a media member in a way has kind of helped me process that and almost look at it from 10,000 feet. I was just so proud of my Spire guys because it's been a tough, tough stretch we've been in the middle of right now. And for us to rebound like that and execute a race and to have a chance to beat the hometown kid in Atlanta, also the 2020 NASCAR Cup champion, no less, man, we went down swinging, and that's all you can ask for.
So, Corey, a lot of the guys that you're racing against, you have raced against a long time ago. They've been able to get great rides. So when you see those guys, you used to beat them. You used to beat them in your own equipment. Do you feel like you're still on equal ground with the right stuff? You can take it to them again.
Well, I mean, we're at the tip of the spear now. I mean, everybody has got to the Cup Series their own way. But, you know, those guys just happen to get around a great group of people, great organizations, whether that be Kyle Larson or Chase or Bubba or Daniel Suarez. I mean, the list goes on and on of guys who raced in that, you know, 2012 class a decade ago that I was going toe-to-toe with. And, you know, my path just hasn't been like that. My path has been starting from the bottom at BK Racing, literally at the bottom of the barrel, fighting, scrapping, almost like you're in NASCAR 2004 career mode, and each rung you keep getting up the ladder and your cars continue to get faster and faster. But you know, those guys obviously are winners and champions, and I would love to think in the right situation I can be in that same scenario. But for now, man, I love going to battle with my seven guys, and we showed what we were capable of this weekend.
All right, listen, you impressed a lot of people, but we talked about you in pre-race and said this is a guy who can come out here and take a win and totally upend the point system and totally upend the playoffs. But my question to you is this, is you go into a season, and I talk about it all the time, when you start getting looks at wins, eventually the wins come. But in the course of a season, how many races do you guys go into? Do you go into and say, I'm going to have a look at a win today? Obviously, you were confident going into Atlanta. You look at Daytona, you look at Talladega. Are there any other races that you look at and say, that's a race I've got circled that I know we can do something?
Well, Martinsville is one I always get excited to, but I finished seven laps down on speed the first race there, so that was a pretty big letdown. But I don't know what it is about Atlanta now. I feel like it's a combination of you have to have great aero balance, but you also have to mechanical balance. And you see a lot of guys trim their stuff out and not race well. And I feel like Sparks had a great setup there the first race of the year, as well as, you know, this one when we came back. So I just had a feeling. I had a feeling all week going in there that was our shot to, you know, to throw a Hail Mary, like I said in that NASCAR.com interview. And try to punch our way into the playoffs, and we couldn't get any closer, to be honest with you. And it was pretty cool.
All right, so Corey, it's a call and show, and I think we got a fan on the line that wants to talk to Corey. Go ahead, you're on with Corey LaJoy.
Yeah, Corey. Hey, this is Josh Robach in calling, and my question is. Well, in the late 80s and early 90s, we saw Alan Kulwicki rise up and become a champion in the 1992 season before his passing in 93. I know that the number 7 always seems to have some major significance to the Kulwicki family, and it's amazing to see you leading and competing for the victory with that number. Kyle Petty, I know you used to race against Kulwicki when you were competing for the title in 92, so this question may pertain to you a little bit. But with how you performed, Corey, at Atlanta yesterday, could we possibly be seeing you as another underbird rising from Kulwicki's old shop at Spire Motorsports? If so, what do you think your history mark would be like, or your threshold would be compared to Kulwicki?
There's a couple of good ones, Josh. Thanks. That was David versus Goliath on Sunday afternoon right in front of you. And it was David, unfortunately did not, he almost got him, but, the fact that the 7 car Inspire Motorsports races out of Alan Kulwicki's shop is something I don't take lightly.
No.
The Alan Kulwicki mailbox that, Paul Andrews built back in 92 still stands out back. Right. So like all those little knickknacks across the shop, always allows us to kind of tip our cap to the guys that came before us. And the more I really dug into Alan's career growing up, it's like that's how I had to do it. I had to know what bump steer was. I had to know what change of the left side truck, you know, track bar did. Like those sort of things and the knowledge of the race car in the lower divisions is what kind of allowed me to make the most out of the situations I was in, continue to make the most out of the situations I'm in. And, you know, it worked for him. The sports definitely evolved since, you know, that 92 there. Just a lot more technical, and I think Alan was on the front side of that. But you know, it's the Cup Series is tough, man. So anytime you get a shot to win, like I said, you've got to take it, and you got to take your shot. We made our shot. We just missed the mark a little bit.
So, Corey, when I asked this question, I want to be clear. I think you did everything right. I think you did a great job of changing lanes, getting a huge run from Erik Jones and Blaney pushing him. But I know how we all are. You lay in bed last night thinking about what I could have done different. Do you think that there was something you could have done different?
Yeah, right here. It's showing it. He gets my right rear quarter. I didn't anticipate the run coming that fast. But I also wanted the bottom because the bottom could kind of maintain pace in one and two, and I thought that I could at least be door to door with them. But we still had a pretty good shot with it, with the one being fairly committed to us, whether it be on restarts or in this moment here, and we still were able to squirt in front of the 43 and give ourselves a shot. But the defining moment there was coming to two to go when he got to my rear corner. If I would have just been able to cover that, we might have both been in the fence upside down on fire, but that's the only thing I'd do different if I'm in that opportunity again.
Well, Corey, we appreciate you taking us through that. So we ask people all the time, I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here, man. What's the one guy? Who's the one person that's reached out since this good run that surprised you? Did you get a phone call, a text, somebody you didn't see something coming from that maybe put a smile on your face and kind of, you know, kept you going for more wins here?
Man, it's give or take about 400, over 400 people probably texting me. And, you know, guys like Dale Jr., obviously I've talked to you, being a large part of what we're doing at Spire as well. It certainly means a lot. But it's not even somebody like anybody listening to this would know. It's like all those people that have helped me along the way that, like, still are watching my career. So, you know, the people who might not be significant to the people watching the race necessarily, but the people who are significant to my career, those are the ones that really mean a lot.
Well, man, thanks for calling in. We know where you're at. Go get you some sushi. It's right behind you, other table over there. You've earned yourself a cold beverage, man. Great work on Sunday. Impressive. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, fellas. Have a good evening.
You too, man. Right. Got it. It's great to hear that. Asking that question because he's so genuine, right? It wouldn't shock me it's not a guy we know, right? It's somebody that worked on that K&N car, somebody he helped in high school. That's how Corey is. And I think that what the fans saw there is who he is. I hope he becomes a fan favorite. That interview was impressive.
Yeah. Corey is an old school throwback driver.
Love
it. And, you know, he built his own race cars, raced against Chase Elliott, raced against all those guys he mentioned. He and his dad were in his dad's shop building those race cars. And he knows every piece of them. Still today is a great fabricator. And he could go build a late model right now today and it could go compete. So I love the old school Corey LaJoie. And, I'm proud of what Spire has done. Spire has taken a major step. I hope they can continue to take steps and keep that guy. Or if they can't, I hope he can find a way into a better ride where he can show what he can do. Either way, I'm happy with. Spire's done a great job. I would love to see them be able to up their game and bringing better cars.
You said David Verth Goliath. Well, it was a David Verth Goliath weekend. Our buddy David, well, Parker, that is. Parker Clearman, the little team that could out of Tennessee, went to the road course and went back to victory lane with Parker behind the wheel. We're going to have him join. We're going to talk a little truck racing and maybe get Parker's opinion on the Chastain action.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I'm going to say this. Sorry, caller. But I'm going to say this. And let me say this. And I want to go on record with that. I'm going to say it until Pat freezes over, okay? But let me say this.
Let me say this, everybody. Leave your messages anytime after 7:30 on Wednesday, and we're going to get your questions and comments featured. We're going to do our best to. 1-844-NASCAR-NBC. Join us. I'm not telling you you're going to like the way we answer it, but at least maybe it'll be fun.
You may not like it, but that's all right. That's all right. Hold on, caller.
Hold on.
So let's go to the fridge.
Oh, look at this guy.
Let me say this, guys. So let me say this.
We are so happy to have Parker Kligerman on. Obviously, everybody knows you won this race, but you didn't just win this race. You dominated this race, and a fun race to watch. again, a small team taking it to the big guys, just like we have with Corey LaJoy. Man, we're all proud of you. Tell us how you did it.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much. Yeah, it was an awesome weekend. We were third in practice. We were second in qualifying and P1 in the race. I was like, we're going the right direction. But what a cool battle with Zane Smith. It was super respectful. You know, I actually had to go back and watch it because I didn't realize how often we went side by side through turn one. I was just so in the zone those last couple laps. But Chris Carrier and everyone at Henderson Motorsports just put together an awesome truck. I mean, that thing was unbelievable to drive. We had a little bit more in the braking zone than anyone else there, I felt like. And so as we got into that third stage, I just felt like there was no chance I was going to let this win get away. I knew we had the truck to do it. If I just made the right moves and didn't make any big mistakes, we could find ourselves in victory lane. And sure enough, we did it. And it's really cool and gratifying to get that team back in victory lane because we've been so close the last couple months. And finally, just to break through, I feel like this can unlock a lot more wins for us in the future.
Okay, I want to ask you about you talk about Zane Smith and your racing. That's a race. That's the kind of racing we haven't seen in about 15 years, where guys don't beat, don't knock each other out of the way, don't just run through them. They actually race. Oh my gosh, what a novel approach to doing this sport. You actually race and gave each other room. What was that like for you? I mean, because he gave you lots of room, but every opportunity that you were in the other position, what's it like to race like that? Because I don't see it anymore.
I know, Kyle, and it's a shame we don't, right? Because then I think for a lot of reasons, right, we see, you know, now there's the win and you're into the playoff systems and those sorts of things. Wins have become so valuable that if it's in front of you, you just got to take it, right? And I think when Zane was behind me, though, I just felt like I had raced him enough the last couple years. We've raced each other so respectfully all those times and then obviously pushed him to the win at Daytona that I felt like if there was going to be anyone that close to me for the entirety of the race, basically, I felt good about it being him, right? And I knew that he was going to do, you know, a move. He wasn't going to make a move that I was going to have to think, like, why would anyone do that, right, or be braced for. I knew he was going to keep it respectful, and that was pretty evident early on when we were going side by side through the midsection of that racetrack that's super tight. It's really hard to go side by side, and neither of us even doored each other. And I was like, all right, this is going to be a straight-up battle to see who has the best truck on that given day and can, you know, maximize it the most. And, you know, he gave me that little shot at the end in the last corner, but I fully expected that, and I think that was completely respectful. We got bumpers there. You can use them. But, yeah, I think that was hopefully a lesson to a lot of the Truck Series regulars that have not really raced that way in the last couple of years to show that it can be done and that if you race that way, it puts on a great show for the fans. And I really think that was the thing that was coolest for me was that the fans won. Like, there were so many fans there that were so pumped to see a race that close all the way down the wire and not have it turn into some sort of destruction derby.
Well, credit to you. You did a great job. Also, credit to him, you know, for having,
for
you. You've earned that respect, and he showed it to you. So that was cool to see. Parker, one of our longtime callers, Nas Carl, has got a question for you.
Hey, Parker. Man, I am so super stoked for you, man. I was at a birthday party, a kid's birthday party, watching it on a phone. I told you in a tweet about a month ago that I felt you could win. You did it. This win is what NASCAR is all about to me. So super happy for you. My question is, now with that little team, what opportunities do you hope can help come from this, whether it be helping your team or if you want to race more? Could you talk about that, please?
Absolutely. Thanks, NASCAR. So, you know, first of all, thanks for still watching, even at the birthday party on the phone. I'm always watching NASCAR races on the phone. But, you know, I think for us, you know, this was huge for a lot of reasons. We've been trying for many years to just expand the schedule to 75. We've done that to getting to the point where, you know, a couple years ago we were doing 7 races in a season. Now we're doing almost half or a little bit more than half the schedule. We've always toyed with the idea of trying to go full-time, which would be fun. And I think, you know, the Hendersons really want to make that happen. They have a lot of partners they've been talking to that obviously a win always helps that respect. And then, of course, you know, I think when you look at other opportunities out there in the driving sphere, you know, winning is what you have to do as a driver to get in those conversations. And I think I've already had some people reach out, which has been really nice, and hopefully some more opportunities that will come from being able to get in victory lane. And I think for me at a road course, it was important because I've won an ARCA at a road course. I started road course racing, and I felt like it was one of those things where I had not truly shown my abilities on road courses yet. And I felt like this was a weekend where I finally got to do that. And hopefully we'll get more shots to do it in the future.
Well, Parker, I hope you get more shots, and because you deserve them. But you also work for us. So we're going to bring you into this conversation that we have. And Dean is a caller, and he wants to talk about Ross Chastain, if you can imagine it.
Love it.
Hey, guys. I'm actually not watching the show live, so this may have been discussed already, but I feel pretty comfortable saying that everyone there is a fan of Ross Chastain, the person, and, of course, his talent. But it seems like a lot of people have an opinion on what he should or shouldn't do in any given racing scenario, though. And I feel like Ross is the guy that will have to face the consequences of his own contact with these guys. He doesn't seem to whine about it when repercussions take place. Looks like, you know, with Allgaier in the past, the proof is there that he doesn't really, you know, he doesn't complain about it. He just takes his licks and goes. So why do we have to tell him what he should do to change? I know my man KP probably has something to say about this.
Well, we have discussed it, and you should be watching on your phone at a birthday party. Although I couldn't do that because I would always get in trouble. But Parker, what do you have to say about it?
Here's the thing. You guys alluded to it early in the show about, you know, this is not new for Ross Chastain to be in these positions. And, you know, I personally actually have been wrecked by Ross Chastain leading a truck race at Daytona back in 2014 where he picked my rear tires off the ground into the corner and spun me out and then tried to blame me. And I was like, what do you mean? And, you know, that sort of the next year we had another run in at Talladega going for the win where we end up wrecking each other. But, you know, that from those moments onward, I just knew Ross was someone that I had to race a certain way and be prepared to be raced a certain way. And that just became his, you know, his mantra. That's what you knew about him. That's what you know as a race car driver, what you're up against with him. And I think the only reason that we're talking about it as much now, obviously, is because it's happening at the Cup Series at the highest level, and he's a winner. And it's happening at the front. And as Kyle alluded to, he's having a very, very successful season while having some of these run-ins. But this is not new. This is, you know, Ross has not changed once in the last 10 years the way he races, whether it was back for 30th in a Cup Series race, up front in a Truck Series race, up front in an Xfinity Series race, or mid-pack. This is how Ross races, and he has not changed. And I think now, for him, the biggest thing is, you guys kind of allude to it, when you do it at this end of the Cup Series, these guys are guys you're going to be racing for years on end. You're going to be around them, and they can make it very hard for you to go and get that ultimate goal of winning a championship. And I think that is the part, Jeff, as you alluded to, that's going to be really tough. In the other series, in Trucks, in Xfinity, you're trying to get the Cup. That's always meaning you're going to move on, hopefully, eventually, and get away from those drivers. But when you're in the Cup Series, they're not going anywhere, and you, hopefully winning, are not going anywhere, and therefore you're going to be up against this for a long time, and you can make it better for yourself, or you can make it really hard on yourself, and I feel like right now he's making it pretty hard on himself.
Well, I'm going to let Ross off the conversation for a minute because I'm going to make it more of a global conversation. Parker, I think you and I had this talk. Jeff and I had this talk. A week ago, it was Noah Gregson who was penalized for rough driving. His owner, Dale Jr., came out and basically, I'm not going to get it verbatim, but said he can't support that type of retaliation and rough driving. I wonder, Parker, right, as a guy trying to get that full-time ride, and you were just in the truck race, and that's why I think I want to talk. Let's talk lower series for a minute. Do you believe, because I believe, when someone like Dale Jr. comes out there, he owns four cars, most popular guy forever, in the Hall of Fame, when he says, I can't support that from my own guy, who's paying the bills at my company, bringing sponsorship in, what do we think, do we think there's some trickle-down effect that, I don't mean Ross Chastain, he's in Cup, but the other drivers that want to get the Cup, KP, I'll start with you. You think them young drivers hear somebody like Kyle, or, you know, Dale say that and be like, I got to be maybe just a little bit smarter because I don't want owners now to not think I'm the guy.
No.
You don't think it affects the younger guys?
No, because I think we've preached it's okay to run over people. It's okay to run through people.
Yeah, that's my question.
I think we've preached it for so long that it's part of the sport now. When NASCAR said boys have at it, okay, the horse left the barn. The horse left the barn. Mm-hmm. Because then it went away. And when Jeff came along, there was respect. There was respect. When I came along, there was respect. I respected you as a driver and the equipment that you were in. When we got throwaway cars where you throw them away when the race is away. It doesn't mean anything. It's not more work for my guys back at the shop. We're just throwing that thing away when we get back. When you get to a point where it's not there, I like you. I don't respect you, but like you.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's different. And Ross is, and I'm going to go back to Ross on some of this stuff too. These guys have this mentality. I'll never forget this. I'm running Daytona, okay? Rusty drives windshield deep. up under the back of me, down the back stretch, spins me out through the grass, okay? And he's got an in-car camera. He's got an in-car camera. So we go to run a Patron show, and I said, what happened, dude? And he's like, what? And I said, you spun me out through the grass. He said, I never touched you. Never touched you. I took the video to him next week. He said, I don't remember that at all. So zoned in on what he was doing. So zoned in on what right. he was focused on. Mm. He's oblivious to it. He's oblivious to it. And he drove because he was trying to get to the front. He was trying to get to the front. Sometimes I think Ross and some of these guys have that mentality. I'm just getting to the front. I don't care if I've got to run through you. You know what I mean? And it's in and then it's out. And they don't hold it. They don't hold it. And that's why when you come back on them, they don't pay any attention to it because they're on to something else by then. You know, so it's a different, I don't have that mindset. And maybe that's why I wasn't a great race car driver. You know what I mean? Because I don't have that mindset. I have to look in the mirror and say, dang it, I might have a trophy, but I wrecked Jeff Burton, and I don't want to be that way.
Go ahead there, Connecticut. I see a point, Connecticut.
Well, because I think there's a couple things. One, I think, you know, we've made the reward so big for winning, right? That's what we've seen in the lower series, right, where it's just the idea is you have to win to get a shot. And you talked about Ross, you know, not changing who he is, Jeff, because, you know, he's scared that it might take away a little bit of his edge. And I think the funny thing is, as a viewer, as a fan, I like that stuff. Like, I like Ross's aggressiveness. I love watching it. I think it's awesome. I love seeing, you know, someone come in there and sort of ruffling things up and sort of, you know, making waves in a lot of ways, right? Like, that's a really enjoyable thing to see from the outside. I hate racing against it. It's so tough to race someone like that because it's frustrating at times, but I can respect it for sure. But I definitely love viewing it. And I think that's part of the issue we have, Kyle, that you alluded to, which is we've said it's okay, and two, I think from the outside, you have a large part of fans and that sort of thing that don't mind seeing that aggression because they think, that's why I tuned in, right? That's exciting. We're seeing cars run into each other with bumpers. This is what it's able to be done with these cars, and they want to see that type of, you know, beating and banging at times. And I just think that sort of opened up that, I guess, to be allowed in a lot of ways. But, you know, you alluded to it. If the owners just said, no, I'm not going to hire that guy, well, then that would change things overnight. I think it for sure.
Well, and Ross's owner has said, I want you to stay the same.
Yeah.
So not yes. only has he said, I'm not going to hire people like that, he's going to say, I want you just like you are.
Yeah, right.
And I think that, so Parker, I have this interesting theory that I've developed over the last several months, watching truck races, watching you as an experienced guy, trying to teach some younger drivers, hey, let's don't do this. I think that Richard Petty and all those guys yeah. wish they would have done that with Earnhardt.
Yeah.
That they would. I bet they wish they would have early in Earnhardt's career done things to retaliate to say, dude, we're not putting up with this.
Yeah.
And enough of that wasn't done, and Earnhardt became the guy that would just run all over yeah. you. Now later in his career, he wasn't that guy.
He wasn't that guy.
For a period of time.
For a period of time.
So I wonder, like, what is the responsibility in today's world, Parker? What is your thought about, you know, when I came in, Jack Ingram and those guys, Tommy Ellis, Jack Ingram, those guys, they would beat you, like physically beat you,
yeah.
you know, right? So what is the role of the experienced drivers today?
It's a great point. I think when I came into the truck series, you had Hornaday and Bodine that were guys that if you mess with them, they were going to let you know very quickly that you messed with them and this is why it was wrong and this is why you should never do it again and this is what will happen if you do it again, right? Like, it was like, this is intense, and it was the same in the Xfinity series and the same as you got to the Cup series. And I think there is a role for more experienced drivers, right, in that sense, to let it be known that they're saying, hey, like, this is how we race here. This is how we want to be raced. But I also think, once again, from the viewer side, it is interesting to see a younger driver come in with that perspective of not really caring, right? Because they feel like this is why they're here. This is, you know, they care about one thing only, and that's winning and doing the best for their team and their people and the people that supported them. And they view it sort of where they're isolated. They're on an island away from all that. And if you're a driver who's one of their competitors and is trying to give them advice, I think that's a hard, you know, that's a hard thing to accept when you're one of those people that says, no, like, this is, I fought so hard to be here, that now I'm here, I'm not going to give that up because you just don't like the way that, you know, I race or that I'm aggressive. So I think it's interesting. I definitely, you know, I see what you're saying, and I felt that too, and I don't know if we have that right now, but But Denny, I think in a lot of respects, is sort of being that person right now for a Ross.
Well, so that's my question, right? So, and I'm questioning myself. Anybody can jump in. You mentioned that Ross, and I like you brought this up, that he didn't have a problem with being paid back, right? In his career, he never whined about repercussions.
That's
I'm going to give him that credit, right? Because we're all hard on him or a lot of stuff, but I've never heard him whine about when it comes back the other way. So now the question is, does this season, does his aggression cost him an opportunity at a championship this year? He's in the playoffs, we know. He's a two-time winner. He's not in question of making the playoffs. The question I have is, the way he has chosen to race, does it cost him an opportunity? Denny Hamlin was asked. He didn't answer the question. KP, do you think the people that are unhappy with him do anything that hurts his
chances?
That's
an excellent question. But I'm going to say this. I've been around this sport my whole life.
That's why I came to you.
You've been around this sport. Have you ever seen a championship contender taken out in any way? It's a different system now. It's a different system. So you could take him out in the first round, and it wouldn't even be noticed.
Joey Logano.
Yeah. And Joey Logano is the only guy. You know, Joey Logano is the only guy.
That's why I asked the question.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. The only guy that I've ever seen. But he was taken out. As you look at it and you go back to that race, it was the same thing. It was like Denny and Ross. It built. So NASCAR now has brought these people in at different times and sat down and talked to them. Has that happened in this case?
So I don't know. So I don't know that the room's big enough.
Yeah.
To bring all the people in.
If they do, it's the driver's meeting. They could just have the whole driver's
meeting.
I'm with you.
So I think it's a valid point. I made the comment during the race.
It's a valid point.
Are they going to let him win a championship? My thing about what I said about Ernie Irvin earlier was that he stood up in the driver's meeting at Talladega and said, guys, I have messed up. I have been messing up, and I'm going to fix it. And from that point on, he was better. Now, how does Ross do that? That's the question.
Or does he think he needs to?
Right. You can't go back and apologize to everybody.
That's the question.
Does he just keep doing what he's doing?
That's the question.
And you know what? You know who needs to decide that? Ross Chastain.
That's Ross Chastain.
The only person.
That's the only person, man.
Needs to decide.
It's his deal.
So
he might call Justin Marks and get his 2 cents.
Yeah.
Well, but Justin's already told us.
Yeah, good point. Maybe he already knows his too.
Yeah, I think Justin's made it very clear.
Love it.
And if I'm Justin Marks, I'm not so sure I'm not doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, he needs Ross Chastain to win races to make his business work.
That's right.
No argument here. Well, listen, we are going to come back. More calls, 1-844-NASCAR-NBC. We'll have some final thoughts.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Well, we love racing here, and here's all we got to do to prove it. Everything we have going on this week in motorsports, Dale Jr. Download, Michelin Pilot Challenge Series, Monster Jam, Xfinity, and Cup Racing from New Hampshire, Superbikes, IMSA, which I believe Parker will be at on Saturday, NTT IndyCar Series from Toronto. Pick one. Join us.
Yeah.
You and I, Steve. NASCAR Cup Series.
Can't miss us.
USA. That's where we'll be.
I'm interested to see this, too. New car at New Hampshire, you know, I think the shifting, multiple lanes. I know there's still a Wednesday show, but I'm not on it, so I'm going to let you talk about that on Wednesday. But
it'll be fun.
New Hampshire will be an interesting place for this car.
It is.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Park it around the apron, downshift a couple times.
Downshift.
There'll be no contact or controversy.
One thing we've seen with this car, this Cup car, it likes multiple grooves on short tracks. New Hampshire has shown that you can run the bottom or run the middle. So I think we could see a crazy race on Sunday.
100%. And with the shifting, you could maybe run a different gear lower and you run a different one higher. So I just think that opens up the playbook, you know, the options and the toolbox for the drivers. But guys, I got some, you know, we're getting to 7:00. I got dinner after this. I was wondering what I should eat later tonight, and I have this handy NASCAR cooks book here. And I just want to point out two recipes that are my favorites. Here I have the Kyle Petty's Spicy Thai Chicken, by the way, right here. Thank you, Kyle.
Spicy Thai Chicken.
Yeah. Love to know where you put this one together. That's a wonderful chicken on rice you put together there. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very
much. And
then you plated it nicely too. That was nice plating.
Well, this one looks good. Jeff Burton's peach glazed Virginia ham, Jeff. So if you just want to reel off that recipe real quick, because you probably can do it from memory, right?
We can.
Well, I love Virginia ham, but I didn't know you could eat a peach without peeling it. So what did I know about peach glazed ham?
Just know this, Parker, that tonight Jeff and I are going to dinner, and we're still making royalties off that book. That's what's paying for our dinner tonight. Okay, so just know that.
Right. Oh, man. Hey, that's something different. That's also something different about racing today and when we raced. Is that right there?
Let me say this. I need a cookbook.
I got this on Wednesday.
Congratulations,
Parker. Motor mouse.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.